Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Later on in the show, we're going to bring on the pastor of Allendale United Methodist Church to talk about a controversial local issue, and we'll also get into some national politics, and we'll hear about the latest coronavirus news. We'll also take your calls, and I'm kind of switching it up this week. We're going to probably be call heavy in the beginning of the show. You can call us at 813-239-9663. The phones are wide open right now. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. or text 813-433-0885. Well, the U.S. passed 25 million cases of coronavirus yesterday. The country leads the world in infections and in deaths. This weekend, there were more delays in signing up for a short supply of vaccines. For example, in Pinellas County, the website was down Saturday morning, and then appointments quickly filled up once it came back up. So I want to know, how did you fare? Were you able to make an appointment for your first or your second dose? Were you having trouble getting in by phone or getting in by the web portal? Give us a call, 813-239-9663. And as you just heard in the NPR news headlines, reports are that the vaccines are likely effective against the two main variants that have emerged recently, the UK variant and the South Africa variant, though those two appear to be spreading more rapidly and thus could end up being more deadly than the original strain of the coronavirus. But then, speaking of new variants, the New York Times is reporting that a new coronavirus variant has emerged in California. The new mutant is called Cal 20C, and it's showing up in more than half the samples, and it might be driving the virus surge in California. So if you want to talk about anything that has to do with the coronavirus, give us a call, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. Here's a story about the virus that I played this morning on the headlines. And it's the intensive care units in many hospitals across the country are straining under record numbers of COVID-19 patients. Here's the story from the AP's Ben Thomas, and we'll be back to talk about more in a minute.
ICUs take care of the sickest of the sick, and the spike of coronavirus hospitalizations has many in hard-hit areas, particularly the South and West, running out of space and supplies, while scrambling to pay the soaring rates of temporary traveling nurses. An Associated Press analysis of federal hospital data shows since November, the share of U.S. hospitals nearing the breaking point has doubled, and more than 40% of Americans live in areas now running out of ICU beds. One encouraging sign, hospitalizations appear to have either plateaued or are trending downward across all regions of the country. I'm Ben Thomas.
So that's the ICU situation, but as Ben Thomas mentioned there, Florida is no different. The number of deaths seems to be right around a peak, maybe starting to trend down, but the number of cases has trended down in the last week or two. So hopefully that will continue. Maybe after the holidays, people started distancing more again. So, and hopefully the Super Bowl won't affect that negatively either. 813-239-9663. I want to read this press release that we got about an hour ago from the U.S. Department of Energy's National Nuclear Security Administration. What's called the NNSA, it will conduct low-altitude helicopter flights over downtown Tampa and surrounding areas on Monday, February 1st through Wednesday, February 3rd. And the reason they're doing that is to measure naturally occurring background radiation in preparation for Super Bowl 55, that is. And that's scheduled, of course, for Sunday, February 7th. And the reason that they're doing this is by calculating the normal amount of radiation occurring in the area, the team that's called NEST is able to quickly recognize unusual levels before, during, or after an event. So they want to measure how much radiation there is out there in case they see a spike. So if that's something you want to talk about, this is your community, and this is what your community is going to be dealing with, give us a call, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. And of course, if you send a text, why don't you tell us where you're calling from or where you're texting from and what your name is, please. Let's hear one more AP story before we go to the phone lines. And this is about the impeachment, the second trial for former President Trump nears. Federal law enforcement officials are examining a number of threats that are aimed at members of Congress. The U.S. House is set to bring the impeachment article against Donald Trump to the Senate for trial tonight, but the GOP passions appear to have cooled since the insurrection, and Republican senators who will serve as jurors in the trial are rallying to his legal defense. Here's what Julie Walker says about those threats to Congress members.
An official told the Associated Press the threats that law enforcement agents are tracking vary in specificity and credibility. Mainly posted online and in chat groups, the messages have included plots to attack members of Congress during travel to and from the Capitol during the trial. Law enforcement officials are already starting to plan for the possibility of armed protesters returning to the nation's capital when Trump's Senate trial on a charge of inciting the violent insurrection on January 6th begins next month. I'm Julie Walker.
And I'm Sean Canaan. You're listening to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM. And I just want to remind you that in a few minutes, we're going to bring on Allendale United Methodist Church pastor, Reverend Andy Oliver, to talk about a controversial local issue and about national politics. But right now, we're taking your calls. And we're going to start out with Louise from Sarasota. But before we go to Louise, let me give out the number in case you'd like to go to call in. There is an open line, 813-239-9663. Louise, you are on the air. What would you like to say?
Thank you very much, Sean, and thanks for the good work that you do. I have a question about registering for the vaccine. We're in Sarasota County, and everyone obediently stood by their computer at exactly 12 noon, during the inauguration, by the way, to register, and I felt very confident. I registered quickly. I'm more concerned for my 90-year-old mom than myself, but I got a confirmation the next day that my registration was there, but then I don't even know where to go to follow up. The only texts and emails I've been getting are puff pieces on our governor doing such a great job. Do you have any insight on where we go once we're registered?
So when you say registered, what I pictured was that you actually got an appointment time, but you might not have, because I think what you might have done is you might have registered to get the information. Which is it? Is it the latter?
Well, they said that I would be notified with an appointment time, that they were not giving out appointment times in the registration process.
Okay. Yeah, I have heard of this, and you might need to be patient, because that's exactly what you wanted to hear, right?
I just was curious if anybody was smarter than me on this, but I had followed all the instructions. It's the Everbridge, whatever system they're using. They said that you are registered and you'll hear from us with your appointment. Yeah. A week ago.
So there's two, I just want to maybe to clarify for everyone, there's two different ways, there's two different systems, I guess. And what it sounds like you did is you registered, so it's for, maybe it's called pre-registration even. And so what they'll do is they will notify you when they have vaccine available and they have a spot for you. And so you are just going to have to essentially wait until they contact you. And that's that's different than what some people experienced over the weekend, say in Pinellas County, where they were opening up the registration for actual appointment times. And so there were people over the weekend that got an appointment time, like they signed up for, I don't know when, it's like maybe 2 weeks from Monday or something at 2 o'clock. And so they have an appointment and they'll go and get their vaccine then. You, on the other hand, you do have to wait until they contact you. But I think it's good to be pre-registered in that case, because essentially you're first in line when they have the vaccinations, when they know when they're going to be giving out.
Right. One would hope, yes.
Yeah. Of course, it probably wouldn't hurt you to keep following up and maybe talk to a person or
True.
Yeah. But good luck, and thanks so much for sharing your story, because I'm sure a lot of people are in similar situations and maybe they feel, I don't know, more confident now that they know that they're not the only person.
They're not alone. Mm-hmm. Right? Well, thank you so much, Sean, and everyone at WMNF. We appreciate you.
Well, thanks. We do it with great listeners like you. So thanks, Louise. I appreciate your time. 813-239-9663 if you'd like to weigh in on this conversation. And we do have Charles in St. Petersburg on the air. I'm going to put you on right now. Charles, what would you like to say, Charles?
Yes.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to share with you, tenacity seems to be the go word for the vaccine. We signed up multiple times, thought we were getting spots. It was crashed, and it wouldn't end up working for us. And they just kept trying day in and day out. You need to fill out all those forms ahead of time if you can. Finally, I made it in, got my time period for both shots, but my wife didn't. So we continued each day, and probably every 20 minutes I refreshed and kept trying. And finally, when the sites would come up, you've got to just go like, I'll get out and fill, and sign. We got her up. She's had her first one, and we're both scheduled for our second ones here coming up. But it's a dogfight because they filled, 10,000 spots up in an hour, and just keep rolling.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing that, Charles. And that's been my experience as well, at least from what I've heard from people, is that if you just keep trying, you will eventually get in. But it is limited right now. There's way, way more people that need to be vaccinated and want to be vaccinated than there is an actual supply right now. But if you're persistent, you might be able to get that spot.
Yeah, exactly right. Without a doubt, they need more vaccine.
Yeah. Well, great. Thanks.
Thanks,
Charles. Thanks for the call. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 813-239-9663. Right now, we're talking about a bunch of different topics, especially related to the coronavirus, but we will transition shortly and talk about a controversy in St. Petersburg about a church's garden. And we'll also get into national politics with the United Methodist Church there in Allendale. But the number is 813-239-9663. If you'd like to call in, this is Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. Let me read this email that Maria writes in. I would like to know the radiation source is what Maria is asking. And so that's a good question. And that references a press release I was reading earlier from the federal government. And let me read that again, or part of it again, so that we're on the same page about what Maria is talking about. The U.S. Department of Energy's National Nuclear Security Administration will conduct low-altitude helicopter flights over downtown Tampa next Monday through Wednesday to measure naturally occurring background radiation in preparation for Super Bowl 55. So they are just measuring all sorts of radiation that's just there normally. I mean, there's radiation in the atmosphere all the time from various sources. It's not weird. That's completely normal. And that's what they're measuring, so they have a baseline in case they see a spike, because, in case there's a terrorist attack, a dirty bomb attack or something because of the Super Bowl. So I hope that answered your question, Maria. I don't know exactly what they'll find. What is the background radiation? I mean, I imagine there's some radon in the atmosphere and all these other things, but I'd be guessing. So I don't know. I don't know for sure. Jim writes in about a COVID site, and he says, I got all signed up for the portal in Pinellas County on Friday. Tried for 2 hours at the 10 a.m. launch on Saturday. Never could get through for an appointment. Why not a waiting list so we don't have to waste a ton of time on their terrible site? And so thanks, Jim. Thanks for that. That kind of goes back to our first caller, Louise, and she is on essentially what would be the waiting list that you're talking about. And so they could do that. They could have a waiting list, but they're choosing to do, and it's I think the state is transitioning more to what happened in Pinellas on Saturday, where you actually sign up for the slots once they're available. And the thing about Saturday in the 10 o'clock launch is the website crashed right away, and it was down for hours and hours and hours, and then it came back up. I forget what time, around 1:30 or 1:15, it came back. And once it did come back, then a lot of people who knew that it had come back tried again, and they were successful. So, Jim, it just sounds like bad technology and bad timing for you. But next time there's another sign up, try again. And if it doesn't work right away, maybe keep trying intermittently through that day. So thanks for that email, Jim. We're talking about the coronavirus vaccines. Have you been able to make an appointment for your first or your second dose of the vaccination? What are your issues? What issues have you had? Give us a call, 813-239-9663. 239-9663. And you can email us at dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Going to go now to, remember that insurrection that happened at the Capitol building on January 6th? Well, police departments around the country are weighing disciplinary actions against their officers for taking part in that deadly mob riot at the U.S. Capitol and the rally that led up to it. So here's the story from the AP's Julie Walker.
An Associated Press survey found at least 31 officers in 12 states are being scrutinized for their behavior or face criminal charges. Some stormed the Capitol, while others say they were only at the rally. Most have not been publicly identified. Some say if they're off duty, it's considered free speech. But Chuck Wexler, director of the Police Executive Research Forum, says officers' First Amendment rights don't extend to expressing words that may be violent or prejudicial, because that's going to reflect on what they do when they're working, when they're testifying in court. He says it speaks to credibility. I'm Julie Walker.
And I'm Sean Canaan, and you're listening to WMNF Tampa 88.5 FM. This is Midpoint Monday on WMNF, and we're talking about the coronavirus and about the insurrection on January 6th and whatever else you want to talk about before I bring my guest in. Let me read a couple of emails that were responding to that, okay, I'm going to say it, infuriating exchange last hour with Rand Paul. So here's what Julie said. I was fuming when I listened to Rand Paul's interview on Sunday. Not a fan of Chris Christie, but he had a good reply on Sunday's show. That's what Julie wrote last hour, just catching up on some of the emails that came in right after Rob's show ended. Also, I don't know how you want to be identified. Roberto, perhaps, wrote in and said, where were all of these serious concerns about election security after all the previous elections? Fair point. I don't think there was that much different. I mean, I guess one of the points that Rand Paul was making is that some of the rules were changed because of COVID-19 security concerns. Isn't it the responsibility, Roberto goes on to say, of the head of state to ensure election security? I'll answer him again. It's usually up to the states. So not, I think if you're, I think that maybe that is what you're getting at. It's the governors and the secretaries of state. Exactly. So what did the orange head of state ever do to ensure election security besides be a nitwit about it from the moment he realized he might just be exposed for being a huge loser that he always was, is how Roberto ends his email. But, I don't think the president has that much to do with the elections per se. I mean, you can set the tone, and certainly the big lie that came afterwards, that had a lot. Had a lot of impact on what happened in the weeks and months after the election. 813-239-9663 is what we're going to go now to the phones, and we have Paul in Bel Air. Hi, Paul.
Hey, John, how are you? I just wanted to tell you, I just got back from having my first vaccine shot, and it was a pain in the neck to get the appointment, but the process itself down in South St. Pete was very simple, very well organized, and very well handled. It took about an hour start to finish, and everybody seemed very competent and did a great job.
It's in around 34th Street and 22nd, or what is, where is it?
It's at the corner of 34th Street and 22nd Avenue. And the only issue, frankly, was that they closed off all the entrances on 19 and wasn't easy to figure out how to get into the parking lot, which was, you had to go in on 22nd.
How long ago had you made your appointment?
My wife made it in that batch of 10,000 a few days ago.
So if you're lucky enough to get an appointment online or by phone or however it works, you can get your vaccine pretty quickly.
It seemed to work well. We talked to some friends in West Palm. It took about 2 hours for them, and they had to stand outside for 2 hours, and he has a bad back. But people were there with walkers and chairs, and it was pretty well done. I got to give them credit.
All right. I appreciate you calling. Do you know if it was Moderna or Pfizer?
It was Pfizer.
Pfizer vaccine. All right, great. Well, Paul, thanks for that report.
Take care. Stay safe.
Thank you, you too, and to your wife as well. This is 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. It's 12:25 in the afternoon. Pretty soon, we're going to go to our guest. But first, I want to take this call from Mike in Sarasota. Hi, Mike. What would you like to say?
Good afternoon. I'd just like to clear up some confusion about the insurrection and the reason that the National Guard was not in the Capitol on that day, because there's been a lot of chatter about it. And just by covering a few well-established facts, before the that day, Gordon Sund, who was the chief of Capitol Security, wanted to have National Guard there. He correctly read the situation, and he asked but he had to ask for permission for that from the sergeants at arms of the House and the Senate, and they turned him down because, and to make a to sum it up, they thought there would be bad optics to have the National Guard at a Trump demonstration or at a Republican demonstration. And that's the reason that the National Guard was not there. It was requested, but it was turned down. Now, some would say, well, there was some kind of conspiracy and that Trump was involved in this or whatever. But the sergeant-at-arms for the House works for Nancy Pelosi. So that blows that out of the water. And so I'm just saying this because a lot of people are saying, well, there was some kind of racism or some kind of conspiracy that wouldn't have happened for a Black Lives Matter demonstration. But in fact, it was the decision of the sergeants of arms of the House and the Senate.
You know, I don't know all the facts about that. I haven't studied it very much, but I did hear that there was some orders to stand down for the National Guard and that they came from the executive branch. That's and there were governors, for example, I believe in Maryland, who were really ready to send them National Guard, and they were prepared to, and they had them at the ready, and that call just didn't come, and for hours. So I wouldn't say that putting all of the blame on Nancy Pelosi and the sergeant at arms, I don't think that that's the main reason why the National Guard didn't show up.
I think you are correct in that happened on the day of the actual of January 6th itself. But what I'm referring to is in the planning beforehand, that they had the chance to request the National Guard beforehand, but that request never even went through.
Okay, I appreciate that information. Thank you so much for that. And what we're going to do is we're going to transition right now to our next guest in just a second. We're going to go first to a short music break. We'll be right back and we'll talk with Reverend Andy Oliver, the pastor of Allendale United Methodist Church in St. Petersburg, in about 60 seconds, but we're going to hear a little bit of Bob Marley first. Welcome back to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. There's a little bit of Bob Marley for your afternoon. And this is Sean Canaan. I'm host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:29 in the afternoon. And we're joined now on Zoom by Reverend Andy Oliver. He's pastor of Allendale United Methodist Church in St. Petersburg. So thanks for coming back on Midpoint, Andy. Oh, boy, I can't hear you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm really glad you could join us. It's a wild time right now. We'll probably get into a whole bunch of different topics, especially with what's been going on in Washington the last few weeks. I'm sure you're interested in talking about things like that. But why don't you first tell us about your church, the Allendale United Methodist Church?
Yeah, my name is Andy. I've been pastor here for about 5 years. When I arrived at Allendale United Methodist Church, it was slated to close. And the last 5 years, we've taken a rather aggressive approach at standing with people who are in the margins and being the church in a very different way than a lot of people are used to, creating a safe space for those that have been ostracized from other churches. And in doing so, we have more than quadrupled our membership. But more importantly, we have become a real community that is, you know, doing things in the community alongside the community in solidarity.
And Allendale is a part of maybe Northeast St. Pete, roughly North St. Pete. And people driving on, is it 38th Avenue North, will see the signs outside of your church. And they're often thought-provoking. What made you, and even provoking, let's say, sometimes they're very direct. What made you take such a public stance?
You know, I early on saw our marquee as an extension of the pulpit. Only so many people wander into a church on Sunday morning or see what you have to say on social media. I thought there's an important word that needs to be spoken to what's happening in our country, and we have an opportunity to do that through our sign. And so, for example, 2 years ago, we had a sign that said, white supremacy is the real problem. We certainly, after we learned that kids were being put in cages, at Christmas time a few years ago, said, you know, it's not possible for us to worship the refugee child in the manger and turn our backs at the children on the border. Things that need to be said that, you know, are good news, right? I'm in the business of sharing good news. And if you are marginalized and you are oppressed, then seeing a group of people that are ready to put their life on the line, stand in solidarity with you, is in fact good news.
Our guest is Reverend Andy Oliver. He's the pastor of Allendale United Methodist Church in St. Petersburg. And this is Sean Cunanan. I'm host of Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM. It's 12:32 in the afternoon, and we're talking with Reverend Oliver. And if you'd like to ask any questions, give us a call, 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Well, there is a local controversy that is involved at your church, and that is that you wanted to create a garden to feed people who are hungry in the community, but there have been some complaints by neighbors, and what I'm gathering is that some of these complaints are political, perhaps, that maybe they support a candidate that you wouldn't support, and that's led the city of St. Petersburg to have your church go through the process of amending the exception document to its site plans. So what is this whole process? How did it come about, and what's the process like?
Yeah, you know, we've had a garden for a long time on the interior of our property. We, during the pandemic, saw the need to expand. We have a lot of property on the east side of our property, and we put a garden plot down and immediately had three complaints. All three houses happened to have Trump flags up. And a lot of other neighbors thought that it was more about that than it was about the garden. We painted the box that the garden was going to go in and made it look nice. And long story short, the city has said that there's nothing wrong with the garden plot itself. They really should have taken us through a variance process. A variance is if you want to do something on your property that every other property around you can do. And so right now, currently, per state law, residential lots can have gardens in their front yard. They could have the exact same plot that we have. But instead, one of the city staff, who I think is being a little overzealous, put us through this long process. It's been going on for almost 9 months. People have conceived and birthed children in the time that we have been fighting for this garden. And so February the 3rd at 1 o'clock at City Hall in St. Petersburg, we are going to be going through a quasi-judicial hearing. People can show up in support in person, or they can write an email to drc@stpete.org to show support. And if people want to learn more about this, they can go to www.allendaleumc.org/garden. But really, we just want to grow food and give it away to people who are hungry. Hunger was already a problem before the pandemic hit. And now that the pandemic is here, it has exposed some of the worst of what we are as a community. And this was one way we saw to alleviate it.
Our guest is Reverend Andy Oliver, pastor of Allendale United Methodist Church in St. Petersburg, and you're listening to WMNF Tampa. We can talk, if you'd like to talk more about this community garden that's giving them issues with the city, you can do that by calling 813-239-9663. But right now, I kind of want to turn a little bit to the crazy news that's been happening this month in national politics. There's so much has changed since January 5th, and you mentioned one of your signs was criticizing white supremacy. And then all of a sudden on January 6th at the U.S. Capitol, a lot of us couldn't believe our eyes what we were seeing, that Confederates and not neo-Nazis and white supremacists literally tried to stop the election from being finalized and had an unsuccessful coup attempt, but it could very well have gotten a lot worse than it did. It was horrible. Five people died, and a police man was beaten to death with a fire extinguisher, and it's all because of this. A lot of it had to do with this white supremacy. What was your reaction to what was happening in Washington on January 6th?
Yeah, I was absolutely horrified. As I have been listening to people of color, to black and brown people, many of them weren't surprised, right? A lot of things that people who look like me are surprised about, if we listen to black and brown people and the struggle that they face every day in their existence, we're really living in two different Americas. Some of the reflection that I've done has been a real disappointment over still seeing a lot of people playing into the both sides fallacy, an argument that black people and their allies fighting for their existence and to an end to things like police brutality is somehow equivalent to white supremacists trying to overthrow our capital. It's a false moral equivalence that's poisoning us, and it's the same forces that were at work in convincing much of the Christian church in Germany, for example, that what was happening to the Jews was necessary. Until we name evil as evil, it's going to have room to operate. And so I think that we can do better as a country moving forward if we really just listen to the experience of black and brown people and also have the courage to name and root out forces of white supremacy that are still very active.
Some of the insurrectionists consider themselves part of a Christian movement or support a Christian government. Do you agree with that? And what's your reaction to people who have this frame of mind?
White supremacy has long been given a home in American Christianity. I do not believe that what white supremacy is practicing has anything to do with the teachings and life of Jesus, who I follow. And so one of the reasons I think we're in this mess is because a lot of my colleagues who are white have been afraid to name this as evil, even when it's operational within their own congregation. And so when I look at Allendale, we'll use Allendale for an example, a pretty safe and space that's doing good work. And yet, because of our history and generations of white supremacy being operative at Allendale, we still have to take a genuine look at the ways that systemic racism is still very active in a space like us. In a lot of the progressive movements and work that I do, if we listen to black and brown people, they'll tell us that, especially in these white dominant progressive movements, white supremacy and racism is still active. If we can't root it out of ourselves, it may not look like, ransacking a capital, but it is painful and hurtful nonetheless. We have to root it out of ourselves as well as name those more obvious examples.
You know, part of what you're saying is that we just don't recognize it, or we wouldn't even think about it. So for people who are in that boat, who might think, well, I'm not a racist, how would I recognize systemic racism or implicit bias or something like that, that even I hold within myself, how would I recognize that, and what can be done about that?
It involves personal work. So it involves, for me, it has involved attending a lot of trainings. It has involved shifting who I'm listening to, who I'm conversing with. It has involved even the authors that I read. I used to prepare for a sermon, and I would say predominantly most of the people that I was reading were white theologians. Now I'm listening primarily to black and brown theologians and black women and people who are immigrants and people who identify as LGBTQ. In reading how they interpret scripture, it has changed the way that I have preached and the way I have led and the way that we have been as a congregation that has better informed us to do the personal work. So it's personal responsibility. And then there's a level of organizational responsibility. So as a church, for example, we are going to do a racial audit to not ask the question, is there racism at Allendale? But we will assume there is because we're still a white dominant space. And we will listen and come up with solutions to where we see racism even operative in our space. So we have to kind of set the example and lead from the front.
Our guest is Reverend Andy Oliver. He's pastor of Allendale United Methodist Church in St. Petersburg, and this is Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan, and you're listening to 88.5 FM at 12:41 in the afternoon. We were talking a second ago about the insurrection at the Capitol, but a week after that, and it's interesting, I saw on Twitter someone posted three photos, and it was like three Wednesdays in January. Consecutive Wednesdays were just huge, huge days. A week after that Wednesday, the 6th, was the impeachment of Donald Trump. There was a photo of Nancy Pelosi gaveling gaveling the impeachment, positive impeachment. I'm not sure how you put it. I apologize. But that happened the following Wednesday. So what are your thoughts on Donald Trump being impeached for the crime or, you know, being charged with inciting an insurrection?
You know, I think he absolutely needs to be held accountable. In Donald Trump, we saw the worst of who we are as a country. And many of us gave him a megaphone. And it brought to the surface the hatred and the bigotry that's still very much present in a lot of our people. And, you know, Trump was a mastermind at using fear to manipulate the masses, and it will happen again. I think it's really important that we hold him accountable. I also hope that it doesn't consume our focus. There's a lot of important work that we need to do. And, you know, I think part of the right strategy, not just on a federal level, but I think on a state level, is sometimes I think they pass things or do things to distract us from the real work that's important. And so I hope we're able to hold those two things in tension.
And the third Wednesday was last Wednesday, in which Donald Trump leaves the White House in the morning. And then just before noon, you have a new president, a new vice president. And the new vice president is a person of color, is a person from South Asia, and is a woman. And I'm sure you have some thoughts about the relevance of all of those things.
Yeah. You know, I think we are, we're in a new day. I'm certainly excited about the Biden-Harris, you know, presidency, but I really hope that we learn from the mistakes of our past. As Biden talks about wanting to have unity, in the past, a lot of times unity has meant telling those who are on the margins, who are being oppressed, to be quiet for the good of the whole. And so I hope we're able to see a different way that unity can be forged. And that's when it's coupled with justice. We can't have true unity or true peace unless there is justice that's present. And so I'm very excited, of course, for Vice President Kamala Harris and for Biden. I think for me, the highlight, though, of the inauguration was listening to poet Amanda Borman, Amanda Gorman speak, give that beautiful poem that I think named who we are, honestly. It named who we have been and who we could be into the future. You know, her poem ended with, you know, the new dawn blooms as we free it, for there is always light. If only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it. And I think that was a real call for all of us to step up and to step into the future that we could have in the world as it could be.
Our guest is the pastor of Allendale United Methodist Church in St. Petersburg, Reverend Andy Oliver. And if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 813 813- 239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. We've had Rob from Thanatosasa hanging on for a long time, so why don't we go to the phones, Reverend Oliver, if you don't mind. And Rob, what would you like to say, Rob?
Hi, Sean. Reverend Oliver. I'd like you to see if you could address this this idea I have, which is, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with the book that's been out a long time, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. But what about the idea I've had that when good people think or do bad things, the demonization, you know, you sort of see on both sides, but certainly on the right, you know, that the liberals are evil, Nancy Pelosi is a monster, Chuck Schumer is Darth Vader, and similar things. Now, I know for a fact that the people who sort of download these mental viruses into their mind are not bad people. Very few people do things that they think are actually bad, even when, you know, with a little reflection, we realize later they are. Germany, not every German was a monster, you know, in Rwanda. Those people who did horrible things were actually probably okay people other than that incident. So could you please address that so that we cannot demonize the individual while certainly condemning the actions?
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, as a pastor, I believe in transformation, and I think I got to stand up for Darth Vader. If we remember in the end, he was transformed.
Spoiler alert.
So, you know, but I think it's also important. One of my jobs also is to name evil as a pastor. It's what Jesus did. Jesus named what was evil. And you're right, there is always potential for people to transform. I have to recognize the own harm and evil that is operative within me and root that out and be better. I still make mistakes as a pastor. I made a mistake a few weeks ago in worship. Something happened in our worship service that did harm to a lot of black and brown people. And when it was brought to my attention, it wasn't my intention, you know, but the impact did harm. And so the following Sunday, I publicly named it in myself and took responsibility for it and apologized. But I think we also have to name that to simply respond to a situation by saying there are good people on both sides, which we've heard come out of our former president's mouth and other things, also falls short.
I agree.
But no, I'm not interested in demonizing. But holding that intention with naming evil is crucial and important. You know, if someone comes to Allendale that doesn't maybe ascribe to all our beliefs, which happens. In fact, a lot of the people who were here when I arrived, this was not their ball of wax at all, not their interest. I spend more time with those people so that we can struggle together. It's what Jesus did. Again, Jesus struggled with people who were struggling to work it out. And if they're willing to stay and to work it out, you know, as long as they're not doing harm to people, this is going to be a space for them. And, but as a shepherd, I also have responsibility that if harm is being done, to step in and stop it. So I think both of those things can be true. It doesn't have to be an either or.
If I could just add very, very briefly, in the New Testament, Paul has a prescription for that. And that is if someone acts in ways that are harmful or non-Christian, they may be sort of banned from the congregation, but when they come back and they are, you know, basically reject those views, they're embraced back into the congregation. And I think largely that's maybe the best way to look at it, because when you tell someone that they're no good or they're evil or they're despicable, I think it's harder for that person to rehabilitate themselves, as you were suggesting.
Rob, thanks for making those points. I'll let Reverend Oliver respond, but then we're going to move on. But thank you for calling, Rob.
Yeah, you know, if I went back in time and had a conversation with Andy 10, 20 years ago, there's a lot of things that I would have a problem with, right, in my own self. We're all on a journey. And I think as long as we are intent on moving forward and learning, that there needs to be great space for that. So I appreciate your comment.
All right, thanks for that call, Rob. And I want to read a quick email from Marley. She writes, I'm just wondering if a public comment is required if I attend the garden hearing at City Hall, and if so, any recommendations on what to say? So this is Marley asking about the controversy with the garden. So maybe remind people who have just tuned in again what this hearing is.
Yeah, so we're fighting a battle with the city of St. Petersburg over the right to have a simple vegetable garden to grow food to feed hungry people. And there's a hearing at City Hall at 1 o'clock on February 3rd. And we would love for people to come and give public comment. You have about 3 minutes. If you want some of the facts and background on the garden, if you go to allendaleumc.org/garden, we have some information there. But you can simply just come and talk about the importance of gardening for the environment, or the importance of feeding those who are hungry. When we say we're all in this together, we need to act like it. And this is one way that we act like it. So yes, we would love for people to come and give public comment or to write an email.
Well, thanks for that question, Marley. And also Peggy writes in and she likes our guest. So thank you for that comment. We appreciate that. Let's take a question from Mark in Tampa. Hi, Mark, you're on the air. What would you like to say? You there, Mark? I'm going to put you on hold and we'll get back to you if we can, but we'll go right now to Chris in Clearwater. Hi, Chris.
Hi, I want to compliment you on starting a garden. I just don't see nearly enough of them around the county here in Pinellas since COVID got started. And, you know, people ought to be wanting to not just cut down on their food bills, but also have fresh picked energy. The fresher the pick, the more spiritually uplifting the energy of the food's going to be. And my question I wanted to ask is about, aren't you concerned about illegal aliens bringing in COVID or tuberculosis or any other disease?
Yeah, thank you for that. So I think first that I would hesitate based on the relationships I have with people who are undocumented. They find it really hurtful when the word alien is used or illegal. So I think there's a way for us to speak that honors who they are in naming them, you know, certainly as undocumented or just as people. But, you know, as far as, you know, this pandemic, the pandemic doesn't recognize borders. You know, that's something, you know, when God looks at our planet, right, God doesn't see borders. That's something that we've constructed. And so I think as a faith community, as a pastor, my focus and emphasis is on how can we love our neighbor in this moment? And our neighbor is our immigrant neighbor, right? And so I want to be about the work of you know, offering love and support for, you know, all people, especially those that are on the margins, like someone that might be an immigrant. And if anything, the numbers show that they should be more concerned about people from the United States traveling there rather than the opposite way. But I thank you for your call.
Yeah, Chris, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. Call again, please. And I'm going to give out the number because there are a couple of open lines, 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Our guest is Reverend Andy Oliver. He's pastor of Allendale United Methodist Church in St. Pete. This is Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan, and we're taking your calls to the end of the hour. We could talk, Reverend Oliver, about the COVID-19 crisis. What does that mean for your community or for our community in general in Tampa Bay? What words would you say for people who are dealing with this economic and health crisis?
When the pandemic hit, we immediately shut down our property. And we have been worshiping online, live stream on Sunday mornings at 10:30. And we will continue that practice until we feel like it's safe to open. We have reopened part of our property because there are a number of AA groups that got, Alcoholics Anonymous groups that got kicked out of their properties that they were meeting at. And we felt like that was essential for people during this pandemic that needed support around, you know, a drinking problem, to be able to have a community still. And so we've allowed for that and have protocols in place to keep everyone safe. But looking at COVID on a statewide level, I think we have to name that Governor DeSantis and many of the Florida GOP electeds, they're directly responsible for the number of deaths that have tragically happened in our state. And, you know, it's state-sponsored killing because of the incompetence that they have shown. When we could have had a mask mandate or very clear leadership at the top that could have saved so many lives. I've done several funerals. I've you know, held people who are just devastated at the loss of a loved one. You know, we've got to get together as a state. I'm really proud of the way that our community has responded. I think that St. Pete and Tampa both have done a pretty good job. We still have pockets that, you know, are, I saw out there celebrating the Bucks headed to the Super Bowl, you know, unmasked. And I think wearing a mask saves lives. And, you know, it really hurts me when I see people not following that because it's just so important right now that we protect one another.
And Trudy from Brandon writes in and says she kind of agrees with what you're saying. She says that I think there will be a spike in Tampa as a result of yesterday's Bucks win and all those people celebrating without masks last night. So I hope you're wrong, Trudy and Reverend Oliver, but I think that that's a kind of a logical conclusion for people to draw. And also with the big Super Bowl coming and not as many fans as normal, but people will be traveling to Tampa to see this game and to even participate outside the stadium from a distance. And we'll have to watch and see if the Tampa Bay area has a spike because of the Super Bowl.
I think we definitely will, you know, just from people gathering to watch it. And so I hope that people can put safety, you know, over the ability to do that.
Continue to be smart and be safe. Let's try to get in a phone call or two before we go. Philip in Florida, that's pretty specific. Philip, what would you like to say?
Yes, thank you very much for receiving my call, you and Dr. And Reverend Oliver. But I have something I'd like to read for you, just almost like a closing.
If it's very quick, please.
Very quick. I have died in Vietnam, but I have walked the face of the moon. I have befouled the waters and tainted the air of a magnificent land, but I have made it safe from disease. I have flown through the sky faster than the sun, but have idled in streets made ugly with traffic. I have littered the land with garbage, but I have built upon it 100 million homes. I have divided schools of my prejudice, but I have sent armies to unite them. I have beat down my enemies with clubs, but I have built courtrooms to keep them free. I have built a bomb to destroy the world, but I have used it to light a light. I have outraged my brothers in the alleys of the ghettos, but I have transplanted a human heart. I have scribbled out filth and pornography, but I have elevated the philosophy of man. I have watched children starve from my golden towers, but I have fed half of the earth. I was raised in a grotesque slum, but I am supplied by the silver spoon of opulence. I live in the greatest country in the world, in the greatest time in history, but I scorn the ground I stand upon. I am ashamed, but I am proud. I am an American.
All right, thank you, Philip. Thanks for that. I appreciate the call. And let's squeeze one more in. Mark from Tampa. Hi, Mark. What would you like to say? Still not there. All right. Well, Jeanette in Gulfport is on the line. So, Jeanette, do you have something quickly you could say?
Yes. I just want to say how wonderful it is that they want, that the church is trying to do a garden to feed homeless people. I don't understand why anybody would think that was a bad idea. And I think it's horrible that they've had to wait 9 months just to put this garden in to help people. I don't know what is going on in Pinellas, but I feel it too. The negativity and the anger and the people and the privilege. I'm tired of it. Just want to say that. Thank you.
All right, Jeanette, thank you so much. And maybe we can use that to transition to the end of the show as we finish the show here. Whoa, sorry about that. Didn't mean for that to be so loud. Reverend Oliver, why don't you tell people about this hearing that's coming up about your community garden?
Yeah, again, we simply want to have a garden to feed hungry people. And that hearing the city is requiring us to go through in order to have a simple garden is February 3rd, 1 o'clock at City Hall in St. Petersburg. You can email drc@stpete.org if you want to write something in support. You can show up in person and prepare a 3-minute public comment statement. And again, if you want to learn more facts about the garden, you can go to www.allendaleumc.org/garden.
Thanks so much.
We appreciate your support.
Thank you so much for coming on WMNF's Midpoint Monday, Andy.
Thank you for having me.
Reverend Andy Oliver is the pastor of Allendale United Methodist Church in St. Petersburg. I want to thank everyone who called and emailed and texted today. And thanks to the team here, Frank Knox and the engineering team. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. And tomorrow also kicks off our 2-day fundraising drive. I hope you can support Mark Bureau and all the other great WMNF programs with your financial support. You can make a donation at WMNF.org. Stay tuned right now for Latino 54. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Please wear a mask.